Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. It once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2505. That's 2505. Tonight we're supposed to have a wonderful guest on. I see she is here. I'm really happy to see that. Her name is Lakeisha Davis Small, and she is from Washington, D.C. She is a survivor, she's an activist, and she's an author, and there's just so many things that she's up to. But first, I do want to read our mission statement. I do that. And so I'm just going to get that out of the way. And this is only a tiny bit of what NASCA does, but it'll give you a little idea. Okay, we have a single purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. And number one is educating the public, and that's especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing child abuse, especially child sexual abuse, and presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic problem. This isn't just in our country, it's all over the world. We know this. And number two, I don't need this. I know this by heart, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, and that's providing many services to adults. That's adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the issues of prevention, intervention, and recovery. Okay. Now, that's just a little bit of what we do here. There's just so much more I could say about NASCA. I've been on here for 11 years, and I could probably write a book just for my 11 years. Anyway, so tonight we have Bill with us from Florida. He is our founder. He's going to be helping me tonight. And also we have our guest, and her name again is Lakeisha Davis Small. And she is from Washington, D.C. She is a survivor of child abuse and an activist. Lakeisha shares that she was sodomized at age 5 by a 21-year-old relative of her father. And I'm not going to go on any more than that, because what I like to do is to give just a little bit of an introduction. And then I like for our guests, okay, to go from there and tell the story in their own way and in their own words. And so, Lakeisha, welcome aboard. I'm so happy you're here. Oops. Let me get that going there. That's better. Now can you hear me?
Yes.
Lakeisha? Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I'm having a little bit of eye problem here. Okay.
It's okay.
All right. So anyway, yeah. So let me just say something to you. I'm very happy you're here. I did look at your bio earlier, and you have a lot of things that you've been doing over the years, and you've come a long way, baby. Yes, you have. So I'm happy to have you. And what we do on the show is many times we have people who listen through the computer. We have people who go in the archives later, or they come aboard even while the show is in progress. And some are listening right now. And so the point is this. I will go to the panel from time to time and, see if people have questions or like to make a comment. Have you ever listened to our show before? Lakeisha?
Yes. So thank you so much for having me. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Have you ever listened to our show before?
I have not. So this is, you know, my first opportunity to be a part of the show and actually know about it. So I will tune in the future from here on out.
Well, we're always glad to have people come back. And you know what? A lot of people are so happy that they came on and they told this story. And, you know, everyone's on different levels of their healing journey. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to call it the healing journey. And you're, judging from what I've seen in your bio, you're quite a long ways in your healing journey, and that's great because, you see, that gives people hope who are distorting mm-hmm. their healing journey. You know, well, mm-hmm. if she can do it, or if he can do it, you know, maybe I can do it, and it gives them hope. So this is very good. So why don't you start out from the very beginning and, you know, tell us what happened. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. So thank you. So I would like mm-hmm. to start out with my story. My father was a single father. My mother left when I was 5. She, you know, was looking for love in all the wrong places, and she definitely, you know, got with my dad in hopes that he could fulfill some type of void in her soul. So she actually asked my dad if they could have a child. So I didn't just pop up on the scene. I was planned because she had a void in which she thought that my dad could fulfill in a child, and which, you know, again, insanity is doing the same thing over and over, getting the same results. And my mom really did not get she didn't seek out love the way it should have been sought out. You know, a man finds a woman and not a woman finds a man. So to make a long story short, I come aboard and my dad is, you know, there. He's a provider. He's helping, but he's working a lot. So she's lonely. She meets someone and she's off in the wind. So my dad one day came home and was looking for us, and we were gone. And my mother had taken me to her sister's home, in which she was married with children, and she said, you know, Lakeisha, I'll come back to get you. And I actually believed that she was going to the store maybe. You know, I didn't know it would be 17 years later, right? So, yeah. So when she dropped me off with her sister, I was exposed to witnessing my aunt have an affair with her husband every day after she put her children on a school bus and sent her husband off to work. I would witness her do sexual acts with her lover. And this was in a rural part of Virginia. I'm from D.C., but my mom hid me from my dad. I didn't know. He didn't know where I was. So I was in a rural part of Virginia, Bowling Green. And, it was a whole different world there, and there was just a lot going on for a 5-year-old to process. So when my dad found me, he was my hero. It reminded me of the movie Pretty Woman when the guy rolled up with the limousine and the roses in his hand.
Oh, yeah, I like that. Yeah. I
was so overwhelmed with joy. My dad is still my hero in death, but we'll get to that. So... So he rescued me, and I went to live with him and his family, his mom and nieces and things of that nature. However, it was the summertime, and he was working double shifts, and he was a manager at a store on Georgia Avenue in Northwest D.C., not too far from Howard University. And he asked his adult nieces, who had children my age, and they were in their 20s, and one of my cousins was about 14 or 15. You know, he asked if they could look out for me, take care of me for a couple of weeks, and he would supply money and food just until he figured out a plan, because he was used to having my mother there to take care of me. So now he's a single father with a girl. So his whole life changed. So while at his cousin, at my cousin's house, his niece's house, they had a brother who was 21 years old, and he was left to babysit myself, and there were six other children amongst the two oldest cousins. And, you know, I'll never forget it. And, you know, I'm at a place in my healing where I can talk about what happened, and sometimes I have to be mindful of the sensitivity of others, because I am at a place of healing. Like, I can talk about it in detail and not cry. I cry for others who are still suffering and who would not educate themselves on things, and we'll get to that. So my cousin, we were watching Friday night videos with Sheila E., and I'll never forget the clock struck 12. And, you know, he said, it's time for everyone to go to bed. And he singled me out. So predators already know who they're going to attack and how. So everyone was in bunk beds except for me. I was in a single bed. But we were all in the same room, okay? Mm-hmm. So he raped me in a room with other children in the room as well. Mm-hmm. So that night, you know, he made his attack, and it wasn't, oh, little girl. No, it was a horrific, like, something you see off a scary movie type of attack on me. And I believe at that moment that my soul separated itself from the act. I had to protect myself because it was so traumatic, and I was 5. I think that even as an adult now, when things are too traumatic for me, I know how to separate myself from the pain so it doesn't take me out. Mm-hmm. And I try to teach that because it could be a good thing. It could honestly be a good thing and save you from heart attacks, strokes, and, you know, aneurysms. But it was something that it just happened because the brain teaches itself to survive. It'll teach you to survive. So moving forward, when the act was done, I, as a little girl, 5 years old, I never knew God, but I met him that day. And he told me, and I felt it, to go in the bathroom and lock the door. Because when he was finished his attack, you know, I was bleeding, I was hurting, you know, of course. And
sure.
I could have stayed right there in at the crime scene in the room, because I'm 5. What do I do? You know, I wouldn't know what to do. I'm learning colors and crayons and, you know, things of that nature. So my mind said, go in the bathroom. And now I know it was God, and lock the door. Mm-hmm. So I went into the bathroom and I locked the door. And I have a painting of the moment in the bathroom while on my knees praying to a God over a tub that I'd never seen before, never heard of before. So I have that painting, and I prayed and I cried and I was just confused, and I heard noises. I thought it was my cousins opening the door. And I opened the bathroom door, and I saw my cousin come out of the kitchen with a butcher knife. It was like a scene of Jason. You rape me, and then you pull a weapon out on me. So I locked the bathroom door quickly. I locked it. So finally, my cousins eventually came home, because what they did was they went out to party, and you know, they were gone in the middle of the night, so they didn't get in until maybe 2 or 3 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, Sheila E. went off at 12 midnight. So I had to sit in the bathroom until they came. I would not open the door for anything. Mm-hmm. So after, you know, I thought I heard them the first time. So moving forward, you know, my cousins came in and he left, and I was told that they smacked him in his face. They knew he had did something because, come to find out, he had raped his nieces and nephews who were in the room with me. That's why it was no response or no help, or it was nothing anyone can do because they were victims and they were children themselves.
Yeah,
so,
that is so awful. Let me stop you for a second here, honey, okay? Yeah, because I want Bill to feel involved also. You know, this is a terrible, terrible thing. This is a very bad story, and yet it's so often common. And this is why we do shows like this. And I can only imagine, you know, the fear and the terror that you had inside. Because I remember with myself, I was 6, and I remember the fear and terror that I had inside. And that's a bad place to be. Let me get Bill on and have him say hello to you. Okay, Bill, your mic is open.
Hi, Lakeisha. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. We really appreciate your honest rendition of your story and the feelings behind it. And that's really what newcomers identify with, the feelings. For example, that feeling of not knowing what to do and being lost and confused and all like that, I think that's very common for many, many of us. I certainly had that. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what it was that was happening. And, you know, so this is where, you know, when our trauma begins in a place where we don't even have words for it. We don't have a concept of what's going on. All we know is it hurts or it's scary or it's something where we believe shouldn't be happening and there's no one to turn to. We become desperate, and that's the beginning of, you know, our trauma. And, of course, it lasts all the way until today. For many of us, it unfortunately runs our lives. But I know you and Carol and myself tonight are here because we've at least learned how to deal with the trauma, maybe not gotten completely rid of it, but learned how to deal with it. And so we know that it's possible to heal to the degree that you can become comfortable inside yourself. And that's what we want the newcomer to listen to, is to hear in your story tonight. And I know you'll get there. But I do want to just thank you for coming on the show tonight and, you know, risking telling your story, basically. All right? So God bless you. Thanks a lot.
Oh, bless you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You bet.
So,
it takes a lot of guts, you know. It does.
Yeah,
think about
it.
It takes a lot of guts to come on to a show and you know, like tell people these horror things that we've been through. And yet we're helping so many people who are listening because there's so many people out there, you know what I'm saying, that, you know, they don't want to talk about it because they're too ashamed or they feel dirty. I used to feel dirty, okay? I was frightened. The fear factor, okay, where they don't want the people to know. They might be judged, you know, and all these things go through our little minds at that age. You know, are they going to believe me? I have a question for you. You made a comment where you had said that other, you know, of your relatives, your nieces, nephews, other nieces and nephews, your cousins, had been abused by this man, and that no one seemed to do anything about it, huh?
So no one, okay, so when I found out about that and I asked them, and I found out as an adult that it happened to them and when they were children. And they said that they told their mother, and their mother said, Uncle Michael is sick. He has a sickness. However, you know, the food is on the stove. We're going out. We'll see you. So this was something that they were pacifying an illness because, come to find out, my cousin who raped me was raped in foster care by several foster family members. And when he was brought back to the family after being in foster care, he had already adopted those urges and feelings and obsessions, and then he did what was done to him, to his nieces and nephews. So it's a sickness. Channel 9 News did an exclusive interview about sexual abuse in me on my couch. I'll make sure to, if you Google it, WUSA Channel 9, Surviving the Odds, Lakeisha Davis Small. And I go into how cancer is a disease. If it's not treated, it spreads and it's deadly. That's the same with sexual abuse. If it's not treated, if it's not identified, oh, my goodness, the terror, the torment, the torture that one goes through on the inside is out of control. So I started a movement called Stop Stealing Our Souls, putting an end to sex exploitation, to educate, not to just continuously tell my story, but to educate it, which I will before I get off the phone tonight. And I get deep, and I get so deep that I've taught workshops called The Underworld, and that's real deep. That's exclusive, and that's explicit, and that's real. You know, you have to be of a mature audience to listen to that workshop, because I really dig deep into sexual abuse and where it stems from, and the triggers of it, and it's something, you know. So moving forward, my cousin, you know, okay, now this is the sad part, and this is real, and I have to make sure that everyone hears this. So my cousin gave me gonorrhea, and his sisters tried to cover it up. They gave me baths. They did whatever they could. However, I was being raped for 4 to 5 weeks. I just saw the police report 2 years ago in 2018. I thought I was raped for one moment in time that my brain can recall every moment, every second that happened. Right now I can remember even the feeling. However, I blacked out every other encounter after that with him. Every other encounter, I blacked it out, because when I saw the police report, I myself was in shock. Mm-hmm. I myself was in shock that I was raped for so long. So the reason the police got involved and was able to lock him up and my dad was able to find out was because the gonorrhea had caused such an infection that the apartment had a stench. So they had to take me to Children's Hospital in Washington, D.C., where it was discovered that I was raped vaginally and anally for 4 to 5 weeks. So with that, Child Protective Services had to call my father at work and ask him to come to the hospital, in which they was able to tell him what happened, and his nephew was the cause of it. My dad, so here we go, buckle your seatbelt. This is a ride right here. My dad was so overwhelmed. My dad was an alpha male. His father was a very strong man, and he felt that he wasn't there to protect me, and that did something to his ego. It did something to him as a man. You know, he rescued me from a situation to put me in harm's way. He didn't mean for that to happen. So it really it destroyed him in the end, but we'll get to that part. So when my dad came to the hospital and they had to tell him what happened, of course they had to give me 2 shots. I'll never forget it. They had to examine me, and they took me to a psychologist, in which me and my dad sat at the table. I remember it vividly, and I believe I wrote it in my autobiography, which is on Amazon. Your Deliverance is Coming. But I remember my dad and I sitting with the psychologist, and she had 2 doll babies on the table, and she said, you know, show me what happened. So I put the girl doll baby on her stomach and the male on her back. And my father pushed away from that table, and he and I never saw a psychologist again. ever again in life. And my dad was so overwhelmed within himself, he didn't know what to do but to send me to church. Now, here we go. I was a church girl in a choir from the time he found out I was raped until my early 20s. I sung in choirs all over D.C. and traveled and sung in the choir. My dad said to himself, I don't know what to do with this situation, so I'm going to just give it to God. However, I always educate people that you need spirituality and psychology. Like, you need both, because you're battling something above your pay grade, above your knowledge, above your understanding. You can't go into this fight with only faith. You have to have logic and wisdom, as God wants you to have, understanding of what's going on with the nerves and the cells in your body. He wants you to know about the biology. So everything, you know, we cannot always just say, oh, God has it, absolutely, or he got it, absolutely. He said faith without works is dead. So you can have faith, but you're not doing any work, so you're going to still be in quicksand, sinking. So moving forward, my dad didn't realize that he was running in fear from facing the fear of what happened to me, and it did a disservice to me. But I love him, and I still love him for his efforts. However, I was the young lady in church who battled, that had the angel on one shoulder and the demon on the other shoulder, and every day I woke up, I had a decision. Am I going to be logical or emotional? Am I going to act out or be lustful, or am I going to be a good church girl today? Like, I had battles going in and out of my head, in and out of my body, because I couldn't comprehend. My body was still trying to catch up. My mind was still trying to catch up with what my body experienced, shall I say.
Right. So, that's common, so, actually. Go ahead. Yeah.
Mhm. So it was a real war going on. You know, I would have these sexual urges. I was addicted to pornography from the age of 7 years old until, I want to say, 27, mm-hmm. right before I had my daughter at 28. My dad was a vendor. He started working for himself so he could pay attention to me more. And I guess he got a wholesale of some pornography, some porno tapes. I guess he said, I'll sell these too, and didn't know that I found them. So whenever my dad would leave out to work, I would watch the VHS tapes. And I would masturbate, and I would dance with myself, and I would do all these things at 7. Could you imagine?
Yeah, I can, honey, actually. It's this is what happens to kids, because they're introduced to sex at such a young age, and then many times they start to explore their own bodies at too young of an age, maybe. And in a sexual way, and then as they get older, a lot of times they can become very promiscuous. But at your age too, this is common. I understand where you're at. Go ahead.
So, with that, I couldn't believe that I had this secret life. Again, I was in church. I loved God. I felt the Holy Spirit, but I still was in war. So. Moving forward, of course, okay, so willingly I lost my virginity as a teenager and had relationships with men in which I would call, and I would like to say subliminally, there was a hunger. It was a hunger that I had to fulfill, and it wasn't something that came to me every day. It could be once a month or once every 2 months, but when that feeling was so overwhelming, I would have to feed I will have to lay with a man to feel a safe space. I found out in my education, it was a safe attachment, like sucking your thumb or smoking cigarettes or eating ice. It's a safe attachment. Sex was a safe attachment. So I'm sure during those times of the high level of desire, I was either stressed or overwhelmed or felt scared or lonely. Something was going on in my mind, you know, so that caused the arousal to be at a high level of intensity. So I had broken relationships and situations where it wasn't love, it was lust, and I thought it was love because it's something familiar. It's just something I felt that, hey, this is what you do, you know, to show your affection for someone or show them you care or love them. So moving forward, I didn't realize that I needed therapy until I almost committed a crime on my job. I was being harassed by a supervisor who I was told by others who liked me secretly. He was older. He started harassing me because I was younger, but he liked to gossip and talk about people, and I am not that person. No matter how young I am or where I'm from or my ethnic background, whatever he thought of me, that wasn't me, his perception. So I questioned his integrity and asked him, where is your integrity? Like, you're talking about people. And it was just war after that. You know, if you fight up against management, you won't win. And he put me on leave restriction. My dad was sick in the hospital. He made me bring doctor's notes. I mean, it got to the point that now I was able to realize what triggers were and what post-traumatic stress disorder was, because it had gotten so overwhelming that one day I sat at my desk and I said, you know what, today is his day. I'm going to put him out of his misery. I'm going to make sure he stops hurting me today, because he's raping me over and over and over again. Every time he attacks me, I have to go in the bathroom and cry. You know, the whole office go out to lunch, and I'm made to stay in the office like a kid. I mean, I was being brutalized. I mean, just humiliated and laughed at and talked about. And I had made up in my mind that, you know, I was going to just end the pain. And I've never been suicidal, and I've always felt homicidal, meaning I didn't cause the pain to myself, so why should I die? Like, I didn't do it. I'm not going to cut myself up for what? The person is chosen to take it to go. You know, but God doesn't want us to do that.
I hear you. But, you listen, know. I hear you. You know, hey, look, I hear what you're saying here, because we know that we're not doing it. They're doing it to us, and then we become like, you know, there were a couple times. My uncle, he doesn't know it, man. He came close. I know what you're talking about. Yes, I do. That would have been rat poison. Go ahead.
Right. And, you know, my therapist said that laughter in serious situations, because I laugh a lot sometimes, it's called
reactive. Go ahead.
He said it's what Janet Jackson does. It's the same thing Janet Jackson does. It's called reactional function, where if your pain is at 25 and you laugh or smile, it brings it down to 17. You understand? So it protects. So I noticed that I would talk about sexual abuse and I would laugh or smile, and some people would say, Lakeisha, like, you're laughing. No, it's because I've been able to manage and deal with it, you know, without crying. I laughed to keep from crying. And so moving forward with the supervisor, you know, that day was going to be the day. And I heard the Holy Spirit tell me to go to therapy, go to Ephesians Christian Life Ministries. And I heard my minister preach about this counseling company is based off the book of Ephesians, and they take Aetna insurance. And I said, well, I will be going. I called and I made my first appointment. I want to say this was 2005. And I've been in therapy ever since, on and off, ever since, to continue to work the process. And I thank God because, you know, people, I don't know if you all have seen the show Snapped. But there are a lot of women, a lot of women incarcerated because they snapped and they weren't able to control their triggers. So what I want to tell the listeners is, when you're sexually abused, it's something called triggers. It could be a smell, something someone says, a location, music, anything can trigger the mind to remember, and once the mind remembers, it puts the body in shock where you think you're actually reliving that moment. Even if you were in a car accident and someone cuts you off and they look like they were going to hit you and they didn't, but you were hit before, your body goes into shock. That's a trigger. That's called triggers. If you watch a movie and someone gets raped and your body clamps up and you start feeling overwhelmed and angry, that's a trigger. So we have many triggers that we have to identify, so when we know we're being triggered or triggers coming, we can back away and diffuse it. Because what I've learned about myself is that once I'm triggered, it takes a couple of days for me to cut the trigger off like a light switch. When you walk in the room, you cut the light on, you cut it off. For me, once I'm triggered, it takes a minute for me to walk in the room and cut the switch off, but I have to cut it off. But it takes a moment. So once I see a trigger, for example, if someone is being hostile, it could be at work, they could be hostile or anything, I'll say, excuse me, I need to use the ladies' room. I'll go in there, I'll pray, I'll breathe, I'll get myself together. I'll say, you know, this will be over soon. You're okay. You got this. Like, I'll do whatever. I'll go back. And then I'll be fine. Because if I don't diffuse or talk to myself or get myself in a good space and somebody really takes me there, I won't say that. I won't say something that I can't take back. Words hurt worse than anything. So I don't know, you know, at that moment if I'm going to say something that will destroy the person forever without curse words, because I've learned to be diplomatic. But you have to understand triggers. And I myself, in my first subject, I am in school. I want to be a reverse psychologist. I want to talk to the child in the adult. So I want to talk to the 60-year-old or the 50-year-old or 30-year-old, but I want them to bring their 7-year-old in my office. I want to talk to the 10-year-old that was hurt, because there is a child that's there that's been hurt, but we've learned to keep going, be strong. It was in the past. Just deal with it. Everybody goes through it. It happens to everyone. Okay, so when you live like that, and you never deal or go through the process of healing, oh, my goodness, you're just a grown-up hurt baby on the inside. You look good, nice car, clothes, house, maybe married, may even have children of your own. But I can guarantee you it's a hurting child and their dad's never gotten the reconciliation that was needed to process that type of pain. Let me say something there.
Sure. What you're saying there is very true, okay? Once in a while, I will, like, go to your bio, and I will make a comment, and I'm going to go to Bill. We speak a lot about the child within, okay? That's what you're speaking about, the child that was wounded who is within. And if those situations that we went through, if we don't get the help that we need, and, of course, most of us don't, many of us don't, then that goes over into adulthood, and that's what brings on the triggers. It can be a smell. It can be a taste of something. I once had a guy look at me weird, and boom, It reminded me of someone in my family who was very abusive. You know, I mean, these things happen. I looked at a six-year-old little girl, and it blew me away because I didn't realize I was so tiny. And you, too, you were five, you know, when abuse started. And so these triggers, these are the little children within us, you know, the child within us. And, yes, if you go in for therapy, and I agree with what you're saying, it's spiritual and therapy together. They work together, and you have to have both.
Carol?
You have to have that help. Yeah.
Carol, it sounds like you're underwater. Was it sounding like that to you, Lakeisha?
Yes. But I could
still
hear.
I could too. But you got to just,
okay.
Now that we've taken a break, it'll come back. So you're okay now, Carol.
Okay. Well, what she's speaking about is so often what we talk about, you know, on the show.
Oh,
she's certainly someone that belongs here. You know, she made a comment earlier that she would call in more often.
It's not working, Carol. I'm sorry.
I can't hear now. I can't hear now. Go ahead. Okay, go ahead.
Well,
Bill, do you want to say something?
We're not able to hear you. Now it cleared up again.
Oh, geez.
It's better.
It's better now.
I'll
say something and then we'll let Lakeisha go on, I guess. I think obviously Lakeisha really knows her stuff here. I'm pretty impressed with her presentation. I think it's great. Her perspective on, you know, what happened as a child, and then, you know, now as an adult looking back and understanding it in an adult way, a more adult way. But, you know, the fact is that all of us have these different perceptions according to how old we are, and it's going to change through our life so that the shock of the moment when it first happens, which could last a number of years, but the shock of that while it's going on is one thing. And then the reaction to it, say in our teenage and young adult years, is another, which we feel like we're dealing with it and stuff. And then, you know, the trauma, how it makes us react. And then finally, now where Lakeisha is, as a person that's been healing since 2005, she has a completely different perspective and, of course, a much healthier one. That's what healing is, right, is a better understanding. And I'm really delighted to have you, Lakeisha. You had a very good presentation, and I'm really happy you're here tonight.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. And
you know what it is, Bill? You know what it is, Bill? She has so much understanding. Okay, she speaks the same way and the same language, you know, that we do because we've been there, and she has a very good understanding of that, and so I'm very taken by her, and I'm very happy that you are here. Absolutely. Okay, let's. I'm gonna make my phone louder. I am having a little problem here. Hold on. Okay, let's see if that's any better. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. Okay, good.
Yes.
I'm delighted you're here. And you see, you're helping to educate the people, like I said earlier on, that are just starting their healing journey, even just by speaking about the child within and all the things that we do talk about at times. And you're giving people a better understanding. And that's what we try to do, is to educate people. So you're doing a great job. Yes, you are. Thank you. Go ahead on with your story.
So... I was told most psychologists, this is a fact, but this is something that is always said. Psychologists are crazy themselves, so that's why they want to, you know, study other people. And I can solidify that and say, you know what, hey, I believe that's true, because I was my first subject. I'm still paying student loans. I have a ways to go. But I still help the community and people reach out for help and education, even council members and school board officials.
Good.
But, yes, absolutely, God is good. So what I also have done is I got certified with the University of Baltimore Criminal Justice Department. I am certified in trauma. I'm a victim service provider in which I was locked on a compound for 5 days, 10-hour classes, no phone, no television, just classes on how to deal with trauma. And we had holistic doctors there, neuroscientists there. We had prosecutors from the courts there. We had we had just regular psychologists, but the neuropsychologist and scientist was there. So I had to understand the body. And one thing that I want to tell the audience and let you all know what I've learned is that trauma is held within the body like memory on a computer. It's held in that space. So when it has nowhere to go, and the body remembers what happened to it, and you carry it for years, you start getting arthritis. You can start getting heart disease, diabetes, cancer, like all these diseases that just may come out of nowhere. You're like, what? Like, I was fine last night. I woke up, my back hurt. Oh, I was stretching my leg. Think, oh, I'm getting old. What about the young person that is experiencing those aches and pains and they're still in junior high school because of the trauma, you know? So I definitely want you all to find an outlet to purge yourselves, because trauma can be reinflicted. Even though, say, if you were raped like myself, I'm 41 now, so I was 5. So if you think all these years later, there's still some residue of trauma in my body, but now I've learned how to purge it. And also when I take in new information, like a 10-month-old was raped by her father the other day, and, you know, I saw that and I had to go and purge. How do I do that? You use your creativity. God gave us an imagination for a reason. I have a guitar. I went and bought an acoustic guitar. No one has ever taught me how to play, and I've never gone on YouTube to learn. I was just outside playing it tonight. I mean, this evening. I let my fingers move. I feel the energy, the air. I just let my spirit go. I dance. My neighbors know I have a big backyard. I'll put on my Bluetooth, my speaker, and I'll dance like no one is looking. I will put my hands in the dirt if I have to. I will get on my hands and knees and just pull at the soil. Whatever I need to do, I will write poetry. I will sing. I will do anything I need to do than to let that toxic stay inside of me and hurt me continuously. And that is something that is very important, because sexual abuse is a lifelong journey. If anybody tells you, I was raped as a kid and I'm over it, you may be at a very good space of healing. Like, you may really be at a good space, but to say you're over it, that's a bit much. You can never be over something so traumatic. And you heard the laughter, because that's serious. You know, and a lot of times I've met people who fooled themselves, because they weren't fooling me. You know, they look to par. They're very educated, and some of them are ministers in the church, and they just really believe that they are not affected. And I look at their behavior and their ways and things, and I'm just like, wow, okay, if you believe it. I mean, whatever makes you sleep good at night. But if you want me to be a good person and an authentic, truthful person, I'm going to let you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe you're at 9, but you're not at 10 yet. You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, one is you don't even know you need help. You know, 10 is healed. So I could say, and I will always be honest about my process, and I am at a 7, 8. And I say I'm at a 7, 8 and not a 10, because I'm always going to the village. I'm always going back like Harriet Tubman to pull others to freedom, but I'm jeopardizing my freedom every time I go back and I hear another story, and I'm trying to help another woman not commit suicide, because my telephone is a hotline. I let people know, call me if you need me. And I've had recently and over the years, people literally, I'm on my way to the bridge to jump. I'm like, no, you can't do this. No, I'm tired of the thoughts. I can't deal with this anymore. I'm like, no, you can't do this. Why? You can't eat chicken anymore. You can't drink Pepsi. Like, I just, like, I'll trick your brain. Like, I'm the person you call when you want to kill yourself, because I will make sure you don't. And that was just for that person. I don't use the same tactics on everybody, you know. So I'll feel out who I'm talking to, and I'll let the spirit use me accordingly. But there is a lot of pain, and there's a lot of misunderstanding and education on sexual abuse. And I just want to educate, and I want to help. And even down to forgetfulness, people don't understand. Sometimes people that have experienced sexual abuse really do forget things. A part of the brain, the hippocampus, was traumatized. So you might say, oh, my goodness, I just had my keys right here. Or, oh, my goodness, I forgot. I was supposed to do this. The brain, it's a lot I can educate on as far as that. But people will get frustrated and upset and think you did something intentionally. When that's not the case at all. So I educate on every level possible about sexual abuse.
I think that's
abuse.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think that's wonderful.
Because I always say people assassinate what they don't understand. So when you don't understand something, you attack it, and then you don't know you're causing more harm to the person because you don't understand them and you're thinking they're doing this on purpose and this is, they're just like this. No, that baby, that young man, that young woman was hurt. And I don't care if they were 75 years old acting out. Something hurt them, and that's why. Like, you really have to understand. And some people don't have the patience or the time, but I do, and I'm here for it. So definitely want to give my email and my email out, because if people want to talk, I want them to be able to send me their number, and I send them my number, and we talk. But I always have time to help, because this is what I learned in my pain. This is what keeps me going even today. There is purpose in my pain, and I have to keep going. And I really don't believe that nothing – and life happens by chance. Had you, myself, Bill, have not gone through what we've gone through, we wouldn't be passionate enough to want to help others who are going through it. I know it sounds like so chic, like, what? Like, come on, I was sacrificed. I get it. I know, me too, for a month, remember? However, I know that I've saved so many people from death just from my soul being snatched just a little bit, because he couldn't take my whole soul. He just took a piece of it. But just him taking a piece of it, I'm able to save whole souls from destroying themselves, because no one's out here that with compassion or the education or patience to teach and help. So I'm here for everyone. I don't care if you walk up to me and you're blue and you say, I'm from Mars, I was raped, I'm going to say, come here, let me talk to you. First, I'm going to hug you, if it's okay. And then we're going to move forward. You know, I don't care if you're a man, if you're a woman, if I don't care if you're something we've never seen. If someone hurt you in a sexual way, I'm here. I'm here. Because we have to help one another. We have to be here for one another. And I have a community of us. It's almost like the movie Girl Interrupted with Annalisa Jolie. I have a group of us that have been sexually abused and deal with it. And we, you know, we are who we are, all races, nationalities. But they know Lakeisha loves them. amongst them, they know Lakeisha is here for them, and I would never let them go, and I would never let you two go. I don't know you all's story, but I would like to know, you know, one day if you all would share it with me, you know.
Sure.
But I thank you all so much for this opportunity, and I hope that whomever is listening can, you know, order my autobiography. I have a 13-year-old daughter. I have a 3-year-old son. My daughter's name is Serenity, after the prayer of Serenity, because I was in so much pain growing up about my rape. You know, I just had to make sense of it, and God said, you know, he brought that prayer to me. Accept the things I can and cannot change, and have the wisdom and the courage to know the difference between the two. So I know I can't change what happened to me, but I can change how I deal with people in life and how I handle myself. I cannot change what happened. It's nothing on this earth that I could do to say it did not happen in 1984. It's
That's
nothing right. I can say or do. But what I can do is say, okay, Lakeisha, how are you going to respond to your husband cheating on you and someone slashing your tire? You know what I'm saying? Like, how are you going to respond to pain on such a level, you know, that it could take you all the way off course? So now I just say, you know, I make a conscious decision to be the better me, to show that I'm above average, and I don't have to respond the way you expect me to. And that comes with self-work, because everybody that I know that has been sexually abused, you never want to bark up their tree, as the old folks say. You don't want to hurt them or try to intimidate or do anything to someone that has been sexually abused, that has been taken advantage of, because we make personal vows that no one will ever hurt us again or no one will do this. Even in fear, you feel like, I will fight for my life. Nobody will ever do this. So when you set those types of boundaries for yourself, there's a level of rage and anger that can come if someone tries to violate or cross those boundaries. And this is a fact. I don't care if you're the nicest prime example. There's a woman on my job who, she's probably going to retire. She was raped as a kid. The sweetest woman you'll ever know. Have her Bible, her glass. She's so sweet. But one day she went to take her car to the shop, and the men tried to take advantage and manipulate her. And she showed them a side. She had to laugh and say, I had to ask God to forgive me. But she was sexually abused as a child, and they didn't realize they was manipulating this little old lady. However, they didn't know her past. They didn't know what she went through. Mm-hmm. And she tried with all her might, you know, always be nice and sweet. But this day, they said, I'm going to take advantage of her. And she, as my dad would say, flipped the script and scared them. So managing the anger and emotions, that's something else I talk about, lust and anger, how they walk together. And that's a whole other topic of conversation.
That's true. That's so very, very true. See, many people, either they become introverts or they become extroverts, or, you know, with myself, I became very tough. That was my wall that I broke, you know, put up to keep the bad people away. And I didn't want to take that wall down, you know, because I'd been hurt too many times. Hey, I know my abuse started when I was 6 and it ended when I was 17 with sexual abuse, and then I went into bad marriages. Mm-hmm. I know all about it. And I came from a very volatile background as a child, you know, with domestic violence. So it's like there was never any let up, okay? It was always something, 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 something. And unfortunately, my mind didn't block out anything. Unfortunately, I remembered everything. I wish I hadn't, okay? But, you know, you get to a point in life, at least I have, okay? I've gotten to the point in life where, now, and I don't get me wrong when I say this, that was then and this is now, but I only do that to strengthen myself. Because, yes, just like anybody else, you know, I have my bad days, okay? where I feel down, really down. And I had tried to commit suicide at one point in my life, you know, because it was just too much for a little mind to take in, you know. And, you know, so, I mean, we go through this stuff. We do. But this is our mission. Yeah. I believe this is our mission while we're on this show, you know, is to, like what you're doing tonight, and you're doing a beautiful job of it, by telling your story and also giving out information and also explaining things to people. This is very good because this is how people learn, okay? So I certainly want you, you know, to come back. If you want to give out your email address, you said, you certainly can do that right now. Okay,
sure.
Go ahead.
It's Lakeisha, LAKISHA, davissmall@gmail.com. And again, that's Lakeisha Davis Small at gmail.com. So there's no S behind small, just small.
Right.
Large, small.
Okay.
Yes. Lakeisha Davis Small at gmail. And also, my website is LakeishaDavisSmall.com. And for Stop Stealing Our Souls, is www.stopstealingoursouls.com.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely stay connected. And anyone, when I extend myself, I'm not just saying, oh, call me or reach out to me, because I've learned to be assertive and to mean what I say and not to trick my own brain. Say one thing
right.
And really feel something else. So when I say, you know, if you need help, you need education, you just want a one-on-one with me, just give me a call anytime. I'm here. I believe God created us for purpose, and we're born to die. So while we're here, just live in it. And that's what keeps me going. Even when I have my bad days, I'm overwhelmed. I'm like, okay, you have purpose. Just if it's just to smile at your children this morning, today, just smile. You have purpose. So I leave that with you all. Just walk in your purpose and understand that we're here for a reason. And for a short while, we never know when is our time. So just live. When you don't feel like it, put on some Kenny G and blast it in your house and, you know, just open up the windows, spray some Febreze. Smells help the mind. So smells,
right.
Good smells help the mind. It switches the brain from if you're down in the dumps and you spray something sweet in the air, you know, you sniff some peppermint, you know, do something. It'll shift your brain. So
one thing that we do on the show, too, is if we're having a bad day, and of course we all have our bad days, if you can go out, if you can, we have COVID right now, this is horrifying, but if you can go out and help someone, even it's a telephone call, and that way you don't have to go out, or whatever the case might be, just to lift somebody else's spirits, have a good laugh with them, a lot of times that lifts your spirits, too. You're helping them, and you're helping yourself. And we also, too, what we try to do is we go out, if we can, to check on the homebound, you know, people who are at home, and they're the elderly, you know, who don't have anyone. And, you know, they do things like that. If you do something good for someone else, no matter what it is, then that's helping yourself as well. And that's one thing we do speak about on NASCA. And that lifts our own spirits. Some people have no place to go for Thanksgiving. I don't know what Thanksgiving is going to be like this year, but you know what I'm saying in general. So they go to soup kitchens, you know, things like that. What are they doing? They're helping other people by helping to feed them. I've known people have gone. One year I went to a soup kitchen. I didn't want to see my family because they were toxic. That's another thing, to get away from toxic people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
People in your life who hurt you, you get away from them. And I would rather go to a toxic or to a soup kitchen than be with a toxic family. And I did do that one year. So it's a good thing to look at ourselves, you know, and think, yes, we are people and we do count. We are worth something. And, you know, You know, and like with you, you're learning to play your acoustic guitar. I come from a musical family. I love to sing. And even if I'm feeling down sometimes, I'll start to sing. I don't care what my neighbors think. There I am, and I'm out there singing. I don't care because I love to sing. Yes, I do. One day, someone applauded outside. Oh, that made me feel good. I didn't know I was being listened to. They clapped their hands. You know. But we have to find things to lift ourselves up. And people do use poetry. They do write their books. I know that you've written a book, okay? And that's called Stop Stealing Our Souls. Is that your movement? Is Your Deliverance is Coming. Is that the name of the story of the book? Tell me about your book.
Yes, so my book was written out of my pain. It's a picture of me on the front cover. And one day I was sitting on my couch crying in my 20s, and I just said, God, why do I have to go through so much? Like, why? And he said, why not you? And he said, your deliverance is coming. And I said, when? Like, I'm still waiting. Hello? Like, in some areas, it really did come. So I was very insecure. I would not smile with my mouth open. Insecure about my complexion. There's a lot of things, but I'm delivered from it. I'm delivered from being insecure about what people think. Whereas though there was a time, say if I was outside and there are a group of people talking, I could be at lunch and someone's talking, I'm thinking they're talking about me. You understand? Or they're looking this way, so they must be talking about me. That's an insecurity. So God delivered me, and now I'm so free. I'm so free that people want it. Like, hey, how did you get like that? And I teach people, look in the mirror and tell yourself you love yourself 5 times every day. When you can start doing that, you'll stop caring about what other people say. Because when you can look at yourself, you've made it. A lot of people cannot look at themselves in their face unless they're brushing their teeth.
That's right. I went through that. I would never look at myself in the mirror. I didn't want to see. I didn't like what I saw. This is when I was younger. And, and it took me time to get through that, you know, to work through that. Because people, as we're growing up, many times they make us feel like we're dirty or we're stupid or we're worthless. We're never going to amount to anything. Or all the things that go along with that, all the things that are, you know, derogatory statements. And a lot of times those statements that are made to us hurt more than if I got, you know, hit in the head, which I used to get hit in the head a lot. Amazing.
Oh.
I am normal. I am not crazy. No, I'm not. I was told that. So, you know, but I used to get hit in the head. I'm teasing. But I used to get hit a lot, okay, as I was growing up. So what happens then? Children don't want to look in the mirror because they don't want to see. They might see something that makes what other people said be true, be real, you know what
right.
I'm saying? So this is what happens to us. So, you know, it's a horrible thing, a horrible way to live, Lakeisha, you know. But you've gotten to the point in your life, I can tell it, I can sense it, I can smell it, I can see it, that you, you know, that you certainly are good to have people, you know, speak to you. I'm going to turn you over to Bill now because I haven't had his input. And maybe the contact list, Bill, I don't know. What do you think? Go ahead.
You know, Carol keeps telling us that somebody told her she's normal, and I don't believe it. But anyway.
You know. He's so fresh to me.
I'm just saying.
It's a good thing he's down Florida, man, because I would bite him. Yes, I would. Oh, yes, I would.
Yeah,
we tease each other.
Is that normal? I don't know. Anyway, you know, I'm kidding, of course, but we do tease each other quite a bit, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. You know, as Carol said before, that's, you know, we're deadly serious about this, you know, this thing we call recovery, but we're also within it joyful, frankly. It's a joyfulness that we've, just whatever degree we've done, escaped it, you know, and we are still working on it, but yeah, we're really happy that, you know, that we're wherever we are. I liked what you said about, well, many things, frankly. And we'd love to, as Carol's saying, how about the contact list? We'd love to have you put, give us permission to put you on our contact list here, because we have any number of people on our contact list, and that's how we do it too. I mean, you just never know who might call you when, but sounds like that's the kind of work you do. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. So you need my number?
Okay. But more important, just to finish out the thought here, you have a lot that you've shared that I think is important for people to hear. For example, one theme that you shared a while back, but I think I'd like to highlight slightly, is that the thing we call trauma, childhood sexual abuse, and the trauma that relates to it that follows, brings on physical manifestations that are really detrimental to our bodies, you know, and they can kill you. Most of them are related to stress of different kinds, but that can include cancers, tumors. It can include digestive system problems. It can be, it can be heart problems. Very serious illnesses that happen to a lot of us later in life, especially if we don't start to handle our trauma. Because the object is, if we start to handle our trauma and heal from it, we calm down a little, like you said about the serenity prayer. We at least calm down some. We have a better chance at having a calmer thinking process, spiritual process about how we feel about ourselves, but also physical process, physicality. And, of course, child abuse affects all of those. So, I really am enjoying how you present here, and we'd love to have you involved in any way you'd wish here on the NASCO organization and our we have thousands of people. It sounds like you fit right in. We come from every walk of life, and we have every background. We are abused in every way, but we don't measure these things. We just all accept each other as we are try to help each other heal. So that's it. So God bless you, Lakeisha, and thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. I feel like
with the contact list, I'm having trouble with my phone. I don't mean to talk over you, but it's like, I don't know, you're in and out. But anyway, we already have your number, honey, okay? And but what we need, you know, is permission, you know, and it sounds like you've given that.
Yes.
Now, I'm the night owl, okay? I stay up until 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. There's one other person like myself who's that nutty to do that. I don't know. But you listen, when people are in crisis, you know this. It doesn't matter what time it is. It can be any time of the day or night. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
definitely.
Yeah. So, I think Night Owl was written next to mine, to my name. I know it was at one time. And and I do get those calls, honey. Oh yes, I do. I get them from men and women both, and which is fine. I also get it from college kids because that's gotten around. But that's all right. That's good. They're in their 20s. That's fine. And because we have had such sordid paths, you know, and lives, I was into alcohol and drug abuse and all that other stuff, so I will get the other type of phone calls as well. And but I am the night owl. You don't have to be. But I'm just saying, put your name. That's wonderful because you have a lot of knowledge. And that's what this show and any show, okay, needs, is for people who have knowledge to be available and to help those that are in distress, okay? So just by listening to the way you spoke tonight, I do a lot of laughing too, so I understand that.
Now you know.
I laugh my ass off. Are you kidding me? I don't know. I can't tell you really the last time I cried. I mean, maybe 3-4 years ago. That was about it. And I have a hard time crying because if my mother caught me crying, she'd put me outdoors, and it didn't matter if it was raining, sleeting, snowing, didn't matter. You're gone. Beat it, man. Yeah. So it's sort of like ingrained that in my mind that you know, that I couldn't cry, wasn't allowed. That was like weakness or whatever. But so I mean, we've all been through our things, you know, in life, and that's what drew you to the show. And I'm really happy you came aboard too, because now you're a NASCA member. You know, and yeah, you're a NASCA member. You have another family. That's what it is. You have another family. Yes, you do.
That's
you absolutely
awesome.
Do.
Awesome.
So,
and you also follow me on social media. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Facebook and Instagram as Lakeisha Davis Small. So definitely follow me. Mm-hmm.
Well, I already put something on your Facebook page. I went way down and there was a space finally. So I put looking forward to the show tonight. It's there. So I did that you know, before the show even started. But anyway, yeah. You're definitely a NASCA person. You are. You absolutely are. You know, and you know, it's people out there, you know, be thankful, you know, that there are someone, you know, like ourselves, you know, for shows like this. Because at one time, 11 years ago, I've been on the show for 11 years, Lakeisha, okay? And I was on another show. I was on another show for 2 years before that. So for 13 years, I've been on the radio. I'm very comfortable on the radio, okay? It's like second nature to me. But the point is, I can see a big difference from 11 years ago to today, because people are talking, they are speaking, not enough, because of fear, shame, right? Yeah. Maybe retaliation, they're afraid of that, whatever the case might be, okay? But what they don't realize is they can come on and tell us their name is Joe Blow. We don't care, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to know, you know, their actual names if they want to, you know, remain anonymous. And just get to listen to the show. Get to understand, and we also have a wonderful website. That's www.nasca.org, and on that website is a wealth of information. I use it when I do presentations, or when I speak to people. I make a lot of copies from that website and hang them places. You have to ask permission first, though, for that, and you know, to talk about the signs of abuse, what you see, that people don't understand. You know, there's all kinds of things that we do with NASCA. And I've gotten a lot of good feedback over the years. I just simply have. So, but anyway, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, boy, this phone wants to die. Oh, my God. That's because I'm on the phone too much. That's what it is. But anyway, so the point is that look at, you know, go over our website. I'm going to tell everyone. I tell everyone on every show, look at the front page of our website and click on to all the different areas where that wealth of everything is there. We speak about all different types of things on the website. When people call for help, I take them over to the programs, and that is over to the left-hand side of the page. You'll see it's written programs. There's a line that has different titles and has a red line across it at top, and then programs underneath. I have people click on while I'm speaking to them on the phone, and I say to them, click on to the programs, and that's what they do. And then they'll see we also are not just the United States, we're worldwide. We get down to the United States, they say they're from New Jersey, all right? So we go to New Jersey, and a drop-down menu comes down, and there's programs all over the place in New Jersey. I've had a lot of people from New Jersey calling me lately, and a couple of them are nice enough to, several have gotten back to me and said, hey, I found a program, thank you so much. So there are programs out there. So this is why when I was reading the mission statement, I want to get across to people that we do a lot of different things on NASCA, okay? And then Bill also, too, has three times a week, and it's through Zoom. He has where people can call in. You can see each other. It's televised if you want to or you don't have to. And you talk about, healing or whatever's on your mind that day, and it turns into a topic. So NASCA is big. okay? We have all kinds of things for people out there. So no one has to be alone anymore. They don't have to be alone anymore. And for you to be on the contact page is excellent. Yeah.
You know who I would like to collaborate with and actually sit down and talk to? Lady Gaga. She has a documentary on Netflix. I've researched people that have been sexually abused in the industry, from Oprah to Lady Gaga to Tyler Perry, different people, men and women alike. And they use their pain for creativity. So if you ever get a chance to watch Lady Gaga's documentary, you will just sit there in awe and say, oh my goodness, she's one of us. Because she was raped and she went through a lot. Actually, she was on Oprah talking about it. So if you get a chance, I always write her and reach out to her and several other people that have been sexually abused in the industry, just coming to them as a human being, just as a person, and say, I'm here, I understand, and you may be going through this and never knew what this was called, so let me tell you what this is, you know?
Right, so, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Maybe we can come together and reach out to some of the celebrities and really say, hey, let's put the fame to the side and this really, like, healed together. Like, we're a whole community, you know? So.
Well, we have tried to do that in the past. And, you know, we have had certain people come on that, you know, of certain statures, you know. And, you know, I can't remember his name right now, but I also contacted Friends. Remember that sitcom Friends from some years ago? I wanted David Brenner. You're laughing. Yeah. All right. I wanted him to come on, and he became interested with Hollywood, but he had started a foundation, but it was for only Hollywood. Okay. And I have run into that. What I need is a foundation, like people who are interested. Okay. And everyone being, you know, like sexually abused. We had Larry Holmes on. He's right over here in Pennsylvania for me. I was in his office many times, and we sat and we spoke. And so he was on. And so, I mean, there was someone else on, too. I can't remember him. But it was because of an 11-year-old child who had written him a letter. And he was a celebrity. I can't think of his name. And he came on for that 11-year-old child. And that 11-year-old child did speak about in the letter, you know, what it's like to be sexually abused. So we have had, you know, some key people on, and I know there's more. We have doctors, we have psychiatrists at times, we have police officers, we have social workers, we have psychiatrists, we have all different walks of life, you know. So it's an interesting in the show because we do have, you know, people. But it doesn't matter, you know, whether they are of Hollywood or whatever. The point is, it's abuse, it's trauma, okay? And so that's good, though. I mean, hey, if you want to contact someone, get a hold of Bill, and if you have one, and work it out, you know, if you're able to reach someone. But anyway, we only have, we have about 5-6 minutes left. And what we do at the end of the show is we have the person that came on, that would be you, okay, to offer hope, okay, to people who are listening right now, who maybe they're afraid to make that phone call, or maybe they're just suffering in silence, or maybe they've gotten elderly and they feel, well, I took it all these years and I've been unhappy all those years, you know, and all this other stuff. But the way I look at it is it's never too late. And most people, though, by the way, most people are in their 40s or 50s when they open up their mouth and actually speak about child abuse, like, say, on a show like this or wherever. That's that age bracket. And, you know, think about all those years before, okay, if only they'd, you know, shared with someone. Maybe they wouldn't have gone through so many of the things that we as survivors do go through. So go ahead and give us some advice for people. Go ahead.
I will. So what I would like to first say to anyone listening who has spoken out and who has not, I'm so sorry for what happened to you. I am sorry. If no one has ever said they were sorry, I am. And secondly, I just want you to know that you're alive. There are people who didn't make it out. There are people who actually died during the act, or the person was killed them after the act. You know, and I can honestly say that every morning when I wake up, I just thank God that I'm alive. So that's one, another thing, just to be in existence. I know the existence is painful, but just the mere fact that one day we won't exist, but we are, is a blessing. It's a blessing every morning. And then also, just want you to know that it's not your fault. I want you to know that whatever happened to you, I don't even care if it was date rape, if you walked in a person's house, if it wasn't childhood, whatever happened to you, it wasn't your fault. And especially as a child, you should never hold shame or guilt or pain about something an adult did to you. How dare you hold on or take responsibility for something that someone did to you? So if you've been holding this in for 70 years, let it go tonight as far as you blaming yourself. You will never be able to let go of what happened to you, but you can let go of taking responsibility because it's not your responsibility to take. So my hope for you is to understand and to place the shame and blame on the person that did it. It wasn't you. You didn't warrant it, that you didn't go sign your name on a list to be sexually assaulted. So be ashamed no more, hide no more, feel guilt no more. Why? No more. After tonight, it's finished with you feeling that pain. Now, if you're around your abusers, they're in your family, you've never said anything, free yourself. I don't care if you have to write them a letter. I have a woman whose grandfather raped everybody in his family. And she now, at her age, a grown woman, and he is older, and she has him under investigation. He's in his 70s. I'm not saying if you're, you know, some people are really scared, you don't want to get people involved, this and that, okay. I'm speaking to you saying free yourself. If you don't go the legal way, you make the person responsible for what they did. Do not sit at another Thanksgiving table with the abuser, the uncle, the cousin, the rapist, and pass him some mashed potatoes. Pass him a letter saying, I know what you did to me when I was 7. You really hurt me. I can't believe that you did it. Whatever the case may be, I'm going to have to forgive you for this, but I need you to own this today. Here, you can read it out loud, or you can, I'm laughing because it's serious. You can read it out loud in front of the family, or you can go in the bathroom and read it, but you will take responsibility. So do not continue to be abused or victimized by people that have hurt you. If you are around them, you never told anyone because of fear. Fear is your enemy.
That's right.
Fear will kill you. Fear will take your own life. Fear is your enemy. If you have any enemies, scratch them off the list. Fear is your enemy. That's your number one enemy. That's your number one enemy.
I have to wrap the show up now, honey.
Thank you. That's my hope. Yes.
You know
you
what?
So
what you said makes a lot of sense. Absolutely. And thank you so much for coming on. We've got you'll be on the contact list. And people, I suggest that anybody out there hurting, give her a call. She knows what she's talking about, and I like that. Yes, ma'am. So anyway, God bless all of you. Stay safe. Stay safe. Okay. And we'll be back. We'll be back on Monday, okay, for another good show. Thank you so much. Good night and God bless.
Good night.
Good night.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was blue.
Radio.